Welcome to Arizona Boomer Radio with the Boomer and the Babe. Arizona Boomer Radio gives voice to 1.4 million boomers throughout the Grand Canyon State and beyond. Each show has a different guest and a different topic. We hope you enjoy the relaxed conversational style of the show. Nothing fancy, just boomers sitting around the table talking about stuff. Now here are the hosts of the show, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
And yes, indeed, welcome to Arizona Boomer Radio. It is Tuesday, September 18th, 2012, and we are broadcasting from our studios in Sun City, Arizona. I'm Pete Peters. Deborah Brown is hastily working the phones, trying to find our guests. She will be on her way out to do some client visits today. Again, still, that's evolving into part of her, the main part of her job right now, and that's a good thing. So now she's working the phone, trying to get hold of our guest that's going to be hopefully joining us today very shortly. And as I said, I'm Pete Peters, and we invite everybody to go to boomerandthebabe.com to see everything else that the Boomer and the Babe is Incorporated is involved in. And what I think we'll do is kind of spin the wheels here just a little bit. Then I'm going to play our commercial pack right now and coming into the show. And then after that, assuming that our guest comes online, we'll be able to have that conversation as we normally do. So if you'd just be patient with us, please, wait for our guest to call in, and we're going to play our commercial pack for right now. Thank you very much. We'll be back right after these words.
Boomer the Babe are the publishers of Boomer Series books. Our authors have their own shows on the Boomer the Babe Network. We encourage you to listen. Ron Naraki, author of the forthcoming book, The Ten Commandments of Investing, is the host of Wealth DNA, a financial show about real estate investment. Learn how to build and manage your portfolio. Ron hosts the show, and he always has good information to pass along, as do his guests. Listen to Wealth DNA on the second and fourth Monday of the month at 8 a.m. Arizona time. Tom Liggering's another Boomer Series author. His book, Success or Failure, The Choice is Yours, is the basis of the show he does with his broadcast partner, Dr. Terry Munther. Listen to Success or Failure with Tom and Terry on the fourth Wednesday of every month at 9 a.m. Arizona time. Learn how you can maximize your performance in business and in life. The methods you employ can either help or hinder. The choice is yours.
Hey folks, John Bloom here. When I'm not broadcasting for the Cardinals or Suns, I've been spending the last couple of years with my friends building the fastest growing online golf community in the great state of Arizona. Before you book your next round of golf here, go see what golfers just like you are saying about the courses you want to play at golfmix.com. You'll get the most authentic feedback from golfers giving you information you need before you spend the money you've earned. While you're there, write a review of the last course you played and get $10 off your next purchase at Vans Golf Shops. And enter into the Greenskeeper of the Year contest for a chance to win a foursome at the home of the Waste Management Phoenix Open, the stadium course at TPC Scottsdale. Please join us for the next Golf Mixer, Saturday, October 6th at the Raven Golf Club at Verado, and play a hole with PGA Tour winner Aaron Overholser and World Long Drive champion Brian Pavlett. You can find details on golf mixers, tournaments, charity events, junior golf, and more on our statewide golf events calendar. Just check out Golf Mix, Arizona's leading golf course review site and mobile app. What are you waiting for? At golfmix.com.
The Boomer and the Babe are proud to be affiliated with Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free. Valley View is now serving Phoenix from their new 36,000 square foot location at West Peoria and 107th Avenue in Sun City, Arizona. The new location houses the Food Bank, Feeding Arizona, and the Valley View Thrift Store. Feeding Arizona delivers food to other food banks and food pantries that are in need. If you're looking for a 501c3 to support, go to valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. All donations are welcome, be it food, money, or volunteer hours. No donation is too small. Get a hold of Jesse Ramirez, founder and director, and say, I want to help. Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free.
And we are back with the Arizona Boomer Radio Show, and our guest is online. I'm going to bring him online right now. At least I have two guests waiting, apparently, and I'm going to bring one of them on right now. And let's see. Hello, is this Jim Cruz?
This is Jim Cruz.
Hi, Jim. How are you? This is Pete with Arizona Boomer Radio, Boomer the Vape Show. I'm glad you could make it this morning. I wanted to kind of jump right into it. We've done all of our commercial breaks and so on already. We got those out of the way early, so we've got the remainder of the time just to talk about what it is that you do. And what we always try to do, first of all, before we get into the meat of the discussion, is if you could give what Deborah would call, if she were here, your two-minute movie, a little bit of background about what Jim Cruz has done in the past and what your background looks like. And so I guess we'll just say roll it and give us your movie.
Okay, well thank you. And I'll rate this a G-rating movie, just so your viewers won't be offended.
Good. That's good.
my name is Jim Cruz, and I've spent the last 16 years in healthcare. I actually started as a nursing attendant when I was in high school and college, and then worked in hospitals and operations, and then went into business development, and then into consulting. So, been around healthcare for most of my business career. My wife is a psychologist. And my mom's a nurse. My dad is a former CEO of a hospital system, so it's near and dear to both of us. About last year, we decided to make a change in our lives and do something, give something more back to the community than we've done in the past. And it really kind of stemmed from my wife's father. He lived in Tennessee. He's a retired physician himself, and he was living alone. His wife died, and he had a pretty bad case of diabetes, had his legs amputated right below the knees. And so we had to make calls. He wanted to live at home, and this is a home that he built, and we totally understood that. You know, he earned the right to make that call. So we helped, as the adult children, to find care for him. So we would make calls to interview and talk to caregivers who would come out and just take care of him, make sure that he was okay, had food, and help him with transportation. And I really thought this was a valuable service. And I liked it. So anyway, we did some research, and we decided that this is what we wanted to do. So we aligned ourselves with a very good franchise organization out of Cincinnati, Ohio, called First Light Home Care. And so what we did is, towards the middle of last year, we decided to make the move. And beginning of this year is when we started our business. So we're located in Scottsdale, and we help folks who want to live at home or who are recovering at home with non-medical home care services. So I think that was probably 2 minutes, and that's where we are today with First Light Home Care.
Very good. There are many home care operations here in the Valley of the Sun, and I'm sure in Tucson as well, due to the preponderance of retirement communities that there are here. And there is also people, obviously, that need care in the home, whether they're in a retirement community or not. So how do you find the marketplace with regard to what your services are? Do you see it to be a saturated market or a growing market? What do you look at the market as?
That's a tough call. I do see the market as being somewhat saturated. In Phoenix alone, there were over 400 non-medical home care providers. Now, many of them are the small organizations, and you know, really, the state of Arizona does not require any kind of licensure for this type of industry. So, you know, there are some good ones and there are some bad ones. So, I encourage all the viewers to, you know, if you're looking for someone like this, to really take the time to research the organization and make sure that you know, this is a good quality organization that's going to. That these caregivers are going to take care of your family members with compassion.
So it's entirely possible then, for instance, I've got an 89-year-old mother that lives under the same roof as I do. I have a father that passed with the complications of Alzheimer's disease, and we were his caregiver, and now we're primarily hers. It really could be the case where I could say that I've got 10 or so years of caregiving experience, and I could hang a shingle.
Absolutely. You just need a business card, a phone number, and then you can be a caregiver, or you can hire people that, that could be caregivers for you. That's right. But, you know, you touched on a really interesting topic, and that is family caregivers. And you've heard of the term sandwich generation. That's referring to the adult children who are taking care of both their children and their parents, or one or more of their parents. And there, in Arizona, there's an article in last week's Republic that said that there are over 800,000 family caregivers in Arizona alone. And so these people are working, they're working to raise their kids, and they're also helping out their, you know, one of their parents. And that takes a huge toll, as you probably know, on the caregiver, on this person who is, you know, trying to balance work and family and then taking care of their parents. I mean, it's a huge drain on the work relationship, because sometimes their performance suffers, and they're turning down promotions because they can't take on additional responsibilities. And just the family emotional and physical stress can be overwhelming for these types of caregivers. So what I propose is there's nothing better than have a family member take care of another family member, in my opinion. But, you know, if they do need some assistance and need some help, just some relief, you know, these types of organizations, these non-medical home care providers are out there to help relieve stress and also make sure they do a good job taking care of that loved one.
Well, you're absolutely right. Having been and still operating as a caregiver at some level right now, I do know for a fact that there are things that I'm limited as to what I can do, not necessarily with the care of my mother, but with the activities that I can attend as regards business, as regards social activities, and so on. And so it is difficult. If one thing I'm fortunate about is that I am an open-faced sandwich, because I only have the elder portion to deal with. I don't have kids at home. So I guess I'm an open-faced sandwich in that regard. But it is difficult for people in base, I'm not saying myself, but people in my position to learn the balance. It's a dance, isn't it, between what you have to do personally and what you have to do for somebody else.
It really is a dance, and it's a dance that needs to be taken care of not only for the client or the customer, but also the caregiver. You know, there's a wonderful resource out there for folks that may need some assistance, and it's a caregiver resource hotline. And I can give you that toll-free number. It's 888-737-7494. And what we do with our caregivers is we make sure that we routinely check on to make sure that the work they're doing is not too much of a stress on themselves and their family. You know, when dealing with Alzheimer's or dementia care patients, it can be very stressful, and we just want to make sure that those that are working for us really, you know, take the time to just relax and make sure they get the proper exercise and nutrition they need to carry on and do the job that they do so well.
Well, they need to decompress. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I know for a fact that I need to find time occasionally to decompress. I mean, I can't. I know what caring for my father did to my mother, and then when he passed and she felt a great sense of I'm going to use the term relief, and I don't mean it in a pejorative way. I mean she was relieved. She took a deep breath and she says, now I can live my life again for the first time in 10 years without having, and it's a legitimate statement. And then 3 months later, 4 months later, she has a stroke. And I have heard of that type of situation very, very frequently, that when the relief is in sight, then suddenly they have the opportunity, or the health issues have an opportunity to take hold of the surviving spouse. And I don't know if you have any concept as to why that is, but I do believe that it does happen that way. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that there is a link there. And it's the link of just of nurturing a loved one. And when these, but I still think that's an advantage over being put into a nursing home or an assisted living community. Now, not everyone can live at home. I certainly understand that. But those that can, and those that have family or friends that can help them while they're living at home, I think is just a wonderful way to live out their last months or years. I think as seniors are put in nursing homes or assisted living facilities, this is a totally disorienting experience. And then when the patient can recover and live at home, in their own home, you know, it's more comfortable, the memories are there, and it's just I think that the recovery process or the extended life process can be enhanced. One thing I wanted to mention that, you know, loneliness is a big part of a big issue with seniors. Not all seniors are lonely, and not all people that are alone are lonely. However, according to a study that was done by the University of California, San Francisco, 18% of seniors do live alone. And lonely seniors are more likely to decline and die faster, the study shows. You know, they raise the potential for a certain health risk like depression, high blood pressure, and heart disease. And then the final fact, this is I think this is very interesting, is that two-thirds of the older adults in this study who said that they were lonely were either married or living with a partner. And this finding kind of suggests that it's not about how many relationships you have, but it's about how meaningful these relationships are. So I think any kind of caregiver, whether it's a family caregiver or it's a paid caregiver, needs to understand that it's not just showing up and being there at the house, but it's showing up and developing these relationships and really getting to know the senior.
How do you suggest that that relationship development take place, particularly with somebody in your industry that's coming into a home and for any number of reasons may not be particularly welcomed there by the person that they are there to try to help? How do you get by that?
Well, when we work with our caregivers, they go through a pretty extensive orientation and training program. And we have four steps that we kind of make sure that each caregiver knows and understands. And this is not just for my caregivers, but this can be used for anybody, any family member who's caring for a family member. You want to, first of all, listen and observe. So you want to find out what they like to do, what they used to do, some of their hobbies, and just things that kind of make them happy. Now, these are nice if you... particularly for someone in my industry who is sending out a caregiver who may not know a client. So you just want to the first one is listen and observe. The second thing I like to do is let them help you create a strategy in what they like to do. So you want to learn about their likes, their hobbies, but also you want to get them maybe reacquainted with their passions. So, for instance, I can think of a story where we had a person who loved gardening but could not get outside to garden. So we brought in a bonsai tree for this individual. So this person could take care of this tree, get back into gardening in a way, and kind of get reacquainted with what he loved to do years ago, and games, and then ask them to teach you. So these people, some of these people have some really extraordinary skills and talents that they've gotten kind of dusty and haven't done it in years. So ask them to teach you, you know, knitting, painting, whatever the case may be. That's a wonderful way to really develop a good relationship and a good bond with the client. The second thing is you want to work to bridge the generation gap. Many of our caregivers are younger than the clients that we serve. So you want to ask them about their lives. You want to find out, get them to talk about things that are important to them, their family, their certain experiences in life. To me, these people are like living time capsules. They've seen and done much more than I certainly have. So to hear them talk about where they were when Kennedy was assassinated, or where were they when Pearl Harbor, that episode. So these things, you love to hear what they were doing, what they were thinking, how old they were during those particular life events. And then finally, maybe the most important thing is that the little things count. And so even if you can't go out, and pay a visit with a caregiver. You can certainly do the small things like, send old photos, news articles that may be pertinent, or cards or books to get them interested in things, that so that when you do get a chance to meet them face-to-face, you certainly have much more to talk about. So I think those four things are good for almost anybody working with seniors, working with people who are sometimes by themselves, not around family members. And it's a, like I said, it's a great way to build that bond.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I don't think there's a thing that you said that is inaccurate. But here's where I think there's a bit of a rub. And the rub becomes when the person that is being cared for is beyond that. In other words, they can't remember that there was a Pearl Harbor. They can't remember that Kennedy was assassinated. They don't remember who Kennedy was. They can't remember where they sleep at night. They ask, where am I going to sleep tonight? It's recurring. They can't remember what they used to do as a young person. Their memories are gone, and they're getting angry, depressed, cantankerous, accusatory. That's the person that needs care that is difficult to deal with, I think, based on everybody I've talked to. So I mean, that's the next step in the process. Where does it go after when they're in that kind of a dilemma?
Unfortunately, you're right. Alzheimer's and dementia are a horrible disease, and it just robs a patient of their mind. But there are still things you can do. There are still studies show that they do like to just have companionship. They like to have people around them. So in cases like that, we do things like, and we'll paint with them, and we'll do puzzles with them. And a lot of times they may not understand it, may not get it, but just to have someone next to them means quite a bit as far as these Alzheimer's and dementia care patients. But you're right, it's a very difficult, and it really takes a very strong caregiver to understand that, where the client may be yelling or screaming or, like you said, accusatory, that's not the patient talking, that's the disease talking.
I have a theory, and it's strictly a theory, and I have it based on what I have seen, and that is that in some instances, and not all, and I emphasize some instances, that when a person in that phase acts out, in many respects, that really is their subconscious coming out. Do you think that might be the case?
Boy, that's a good question, and I don't know that I'm qualified to answer that. I've heard people. There are schools that say that, and then there are others out there that saying this disease, Alzheimer's and dementia, just robs them of the patient of their personality. So, Pete, I don't know that I can answer that question.
Okay, that's fair. I was just wondering if you'd had any run-ins with that, because I've talked to any number of people with regard to this, and I, as far as what do I have to look forward to, and I know, and I'll just say it flat out, as it regards my father was a very stubborn man in his younger days. He was a hard-driving, hard-working, it's black or white, he was an engineer, there's no such thing as gray, there's no off-color here, it's either, the light's either on or the light's either off, it doesn't change.
Sure.
There's no dimmer switch on this light, and as he was reaching his final days, months, he was a very, very difficult man to persuade to do anything or to help us in any ways, to care for him, and if the only way that you could get any help is to ask for his help. I mean, he had to acquiesce because he reverted back to his, as a youngster, his very stubborn, very rigid ways. And that's the way he was brought up. That's the way his father was. That's the way he was brought up. But he reverted back to that. And so that's why I kind of formed that that theory of mine, the Pete Peters theory of Alzheimer's dementia.
Well, I can tell you, Pete, that we see a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think, to me and my wife, who's, like I mentioned, a psychologist, I mean, this is an interesting dynamic that forms when people ask for help. And a very common scenario is we get calls from the adult children who maybe visit on a weekend or a holiday, and we get a call that following Monday and say, look, I need someone to help my dad. And we find out what's going on. And so the mother and the father are still alive, but the father's having some problems with Alzheimer's, maybe early onset Alzheimer's. So we do a home assessment, and we talk to all the decision makers. So we try to get the father, the wife, and the son and daughter, or whomever, family members, in one room and try to have a meeting to talk about plan of care. Now, the one who routinely says they don't need help is the father. And I think it's from because he's the breadwinner. He's the decision maker. You know, and back in his generation, the male wore the pants in the family, and they made a decision. So for him, for everybody to be around and to decide that he needs help, it goes against every grain that he's ever, you know, in his fiber about being a father, being a leader of the family. So he's trying to demonstrate to the spouse and the kids that he doesn't need help. Mm-hmm. And what happens is usually or many times they'll say, you know what, give us a month and then we'll call you back. Well, in that time, the father, and usually it's the male, the father is trying to do more to show that he doesn't need help. So he gets out and he takes a shower on his own, or he tries to go to the garage and do some work on his own, maybe forgets his walker, whatever. And then there's a fall or something like that. So now he's in the hospital, and things are getting worse. So, you know, that's just a very delicate line, how we handle something like this, because we have to take into account the personality of the actual patient, the client of ours, but also what the others are saying. So we try to convince the client that, you know, that your family members feel this is right for you, and if this happens, that's going to make us happier and a better-knit, closer-knit family. So it's just interesting that it's very common, particularly with the older males that we help.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of like, and I'm not trying to make light of it, but it's sort of like trying to reason with a drunk. I believe there's no such, you can't reason with a drunk. And I believe there's a certain element of that. It's in the mind. I mean, the alcohol got to the mind, and whatever else, the Alzheimer's and dementia has gotten to the mind. And there's there comes a point at which one is not necessarily followed by two. It could be followed by seven, which is followed by three, which is followed by six. And there's it's just amazing. It's a rambling. It's a scrambling, and the synapses just don't meet. And it's, I know it's disheartening for the caregiver, and I also know it's, on some level, very, very disheartening for the person that it's affecting when they look at something and they look right straight at it and they can't identify it as what they're looking for.
Well, you're right, Pete, and this issue that we're facing right now is only going to get worse in years to come.
Yes, it is.
I mean, the elderly population is large, for sure, and it's growing, and every day nearly 9,000 Americans turned 65 years old.
Right.
When the Social Security Act was signed in 1935 by FDR, the average lifespan was 61. Mm-hmm. In 2005, the average lifespan was 78. So we're living longer, we're living healthier, we're living more fuller lives. But as we do age, which everyone does, it's just we're going to face problems like this. So it's best to, you know, be prepared to, you know, what you might be able to expect. So I think education is critical for the adult children, and so what they know to what to expect and how they can best handle it.
I want to go back a little bit earlier in this conversation, Jim, that we were having as regards the saturation level here in the Phoenix markets, and I'm sure in Arizona. Do you think that it is oversaturated or not saturated with the properly trained organizations?
I think it's probably a combination of both. It's oversaturated, I think, but you know, the good ones out there, kind of the cream rises to the top. And I think when people do their due diligence, they're going to find out who those good providers are. The second thing is that there's an association I belong to called the Arizona Non-Medical Home Care Association, and we're working towards making sure that there's some kind of licensure requirements for the state of Arizona. And we think we're close and to getting something in place. And when that does happen, I think then the weaker ones will be weeded out, and the ones who really put a lot of time into educating their caregivers and making them the best prepared caregivers, those are the ones that are going to excel. Those are the ones that are going to be the leaders in this industry.
Well, we live here in Sun City, and we have just a preponderance of caregiving organizations, in-home caregiving organizations here, and there's three of them in particular that I can think of that have been here what seems like forever, and they have got sterling reputations, and everybody looks to them for support in the community. As far as what they do to support the community and the community's efforts, but also they are the always the first choices as regards somebody that they can turn to, and it's nice to have those kinds of resources here in this retirement community because they're very well appreciated and much needed. Are you finding in your efforts there in Scottsdale that is there a core group or a core area that you work as far as your business is concerned?
Well, I can answer that question a couple different ways. One is, I have my primary area is Scottsdale, Fountain Hills, and Paradise Valley. So, I'm making ways to be within the community in those areas to really kind of to be a resource, so if anybody does have questions, they know to reach out to me. But the other thing is, maybe to further explain what it is we do exactly. when we're a non-medical home care provider, there are certain things we can't do that other home care agencies can do. So, for instance, home care agencies with nurses, physicians, rehabs that go to the house, they're in a higher level of medical care than we are. So their work is covered by Medicare. The work that non-medical home care providers offer is not covered by Medicare. So what we do is we can, we don't administer medications. We can assist with the client taking medications. We can do companion care. We can do personal care. We can do transportation, light housekeeping, running errands, food preparation. Those are things that, fortunately for people, our clients, they're not to the point where they need full-blown home care or they don't need, full-blown assisted living or nursing home care. So it's a great fit for the people who want to live at home and are healthy enough to live at home, to just who might need some assistance, that we're there for them. That's pretty much our goal. But having said that, though, our caregivers do go through quite a bit of training. In fact, most of our caregivers are either HHAs, home health aides, or CNAs, certified nursing assistants. So they've been trained. They've gone through formal education and received their certificates, and then we work with them to make sure we just enhance that process according to our guidelines and specifications.
Mm-hmm. Now, as a non-medical home care organization, correct me if I'm wrong, you can't dispense medication, but you can say, Sally, it's time for you to take your pills. And then it's up to Sally to take the pills on her own. You may be able to go so far as for the glass of water to take them with, or can you take them out of the bottle for her or take them out of the pill keeper for her? At what point does your service stop legally?
We can place the pill in her hand and raise her hand, help her raise her hand to her mouth if she needs that. Certainly give her a glass of water. But equally as important is that we note that so that if another caregiver comes in from our organization the next day, he or she knows to make sure that all meds are documented, all exercise that's required is documented, and that so we can make sure that we really want to do is make the patient as healthy as possible while living at home. But also, you know, we get clients that are referred to us by hospitals or rehab centers that they don't want to be readmitted to the hospital. So we'll do everything we can to make sure that the client can recover from the home without having to be readmitted. And there's a new, the Affordable Care Act that's just coming out, effective next month, actually will start to fine hospitals for readmissions that occur within 30 days of discharge. So hospitals are now looking for organizations like ours to help with that that area in reducing the readmissions.
So the Affordable Health Care Act, I'm going to repeat this, will fine a hospital if they release somebody and they are readmitted within 30 days of their discharge. If they're readmitted for the same issue, or if they're readmitted for any issue?
If they're readmitted for complications resulting from the same issue.
Complications.
Same diagnosis.
Okay. All right. So that's interesting, because I was readmitted just recently, and they got away with me.
Well, it's a problem for some of the hospitals that are not as forward thinking. So you better believe that they're preparing for this. Starting next month, there's going to be the evaluation process, and then I think fines might start in 2013.
Okay, so you say hospital, and this is a little off off what we were originally
sure.
talking about. But not as forward-thinking. What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, I don't want to speak on behalf of the hospitals, but I know that the hospitals that I've spoken to in this area, John C. Lincoln, Banner, and Scottsdale Healthcare, all are well aware to the percentage of their readmissions right now. So for the past 8 months, they've been knowing this has been coming down the pike. They've been monitoring their readmissions, so they know exactly where they stand. So anything they can do to reduce that percentage even more is going to help them eliminate fines. So those hospitals are really working towards reducing their readmissions. And I'm sure, everyone is to some extent, but the ones here that I have spoken to in the Valley are really on top of things as far as readmissions.
I want to ask one more question. Maybe you know this, maybe you don't. I'm not trying to be unfair to you. I recently had outpatient surgery at one of the Banner hospitals. Got home as an outpatient, and 2 days later I was out of my mind, not knowing what was going on, because I had developed an infection. And I was admitted to a different Banner hospital. Does that count as a readmission?
Yes, within the same system, it would be a readmission.
Okay, so if I'd have said, take me to Arrowhead instead of take me to a Banner hospital, because Arrowhead is out of the Banner system, that would not have been a readmission.
You know, that I don't know. I'm sorry, I can't help you with that one, but I know that if it's within the same system, same facility, same system, then it would be counted as a readmission.
Sure. Well, I think it makes sense. I mean, Arrowhead had nothing to do with it in the first place. It couldn't be a readmission based on that. I mean, it's just first time admission as far as their records are concerned.
You brought up an interesting case regarding yourself. What we like to do, whenever we get the opportunity, is we'd like to be there for that discharge plan meeting so that we can hear what what this client who's going to be recovering at home needs to be aware of, needs to be concerned about, so that we can help. So we get a copy of the discharge plan, and then we write up a plan of action to meet that, to make sure that those needs and services are covered. So anybody who is being – that's a very difficult time for people to understand, okay, my husband is being discharged. There's a social service worker talking about what needs to be done. We have the doctor's orders, what needs to be done. And I'm thinking about, as a spouse, how is this going to work for me? What kind of help am I going to get? Can I handle this myself? So we like to be there for those meetings so that we understand exactly what the patient is going to be doing while recovering at home, so we can help out the most appropriate way.
Well, how do you get inserted into that process? I mean, so here's an elderly patient that they've fallen, they've broken a hip, they've gone to rehab, and now they're going to have to continue to do something at home. Either they're going to have a rehab person coming in, or your organization is going to just make sure that they're out of bed and walking around for 10, 15 minutes a day, or whatever the case might be. Now, and if you've never had a relationship with that individual before, how do you get inserted into that situation?
Well, unfortunately, if we're not part of that discharge planning process, whether it be a hospital or a rehab facility, we do know who the case manager is, and so or social worker, and we can find out. The family requested that we learn more about the plans for recovering at home. So we'll work with that case manager or social worker. But also, if they do have rehab services coming in, we'll make sure that we speak with that. Maybe it's a physical therapist. We'll work with him or her to make sure that everything is being handled. And if there's anything additionally that we can help with, we would do. We would make sure that happens. And, of course, document it for the physical therapist, for the family, and for the discharge facility itself.
Yeah, I understand that. What I was alluding to was unless you have a relationship with that family before that person goes in and then gets discharged, how would you get inserted into that situation if you had no previous relationship with that patient?
Well, we've made contacts with most of the hospital social service areas here in the Valley. So, if the social service worker will probably ask, do you think you're going to need some assistance while at home? If yes, here are brochures on maybe three organizations. So if we're not called and the family wants something like this, maybe another organization will be called. But the goal is to, whether it's us or another non-medical home care provider handling the case, is that we're involved as early as possible to make sure that, the patient is not readmitted and the patient has the best recovery period while at home.
Right. Well, that was what I was wondering. I was wondering if the hospital or social services or something made a recommendation of your organization, but they will say, here's three to consider and choose from, as an example.
Yes.
And you may be one of the three this time. You may not be one of the three next time. Because I'm assuming that they got a whole bunch of trifles from a whole bunch of people sitting on their desk, and they go, here's one from column A, one from column B, one from column C. Okay.
Then sometimes they try to assist with, prices fluctuate as well. And so
sure.
They might say, here's a low-cost provider, here's a kind of middle-of-the-road, and here's a high-cost provider. So here's these have all been vetted through our organization, but here's three to call.
Mm-hmm.
That's typically what happens.
Very good. And you have, I'm going to guess that on your website, or maybe you don't have it on your website, exactly what your price structure is and so on and so forth. But
we don't have that on our website because we have different levels of care, but
okay.
They range from $19 to $21 an hour.
Oh, that's not too unreasonable. And what is the minimum number of hours?
Well, we have 3-hour minimum.
And
I've set that up, basically that's for our caregivers, because with the gas prices the way they are, I don't pay that for them to travel to and from the client's home. So I want to make it worth their while. So it's really not too advantageous for them to go out for one-hour visits if they're going to be driving 20 miles, 25 miles each way.
Right.
So we do have a 3-hour minimum that we ask.
And the individual caregivers, how many of them do you have in your stable?
We have 19 caregivers right now.
In varying degrees of expertise with
yes.
regard to CMAs and so on and so forth, or not?
Correct. And then some prefer to work full-time. Some just want to stay active and do 5, 10, 15 hours a week. So they're working different hours. And like I said, different. Some don't have any kind of formal experience, but they just want to help. They just want to be a companion to someone. And so we have people that just come out and sit with or play games or help with the transportation, run errands, things like that. And then for the more advanced clients, we have the ones who are HSAs and CNAs.
And these, I'm sure, are all bonded and so on and so forth, and you've done background checks and the whole deal?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
And then, and I pay for workers' comp insurance as well, so if there is an accident at the home, that's covered,
mm-hmm.
and the client we would not have to bother with that.
So if as an example, I wanted to have somebody in your organization come to give us some assistance here from time to time, can we be relatively assured that if the person you're caring for takes a shine to or takes a liking to a particular caregiver, that that will be the same caregiver returning on a regular basis?
Yes, depending on if we can get a schedule worked out, we try to make that happen as much as possible, and so we can develop that chemistry or that bond with the caregiver and client. But that, you know, always doesn't happen. And it's kind of interesting because, one client started talking about politics and the caregiver had a completely different view, and so she didn't want that caregiver back, which is totally understandable. You know, we teach, I mean, she had developed a relationship that where she thought she was comfortable enough with the client that started talking too much politics, and that didn't sit well with the client, and the client is the client, so we quickly removed her and got another caregiver in this situation. But, you know, my point is that the chemistry is not always right. And we try to, you know, some males want females, most females want females, so we try to get the best suited person in there based on the scheduling and how much time is going to be required.
And based on the job also. I mean, if the person needs to have assistance getting up out of a chair and that type of thing, you have to have somebody that can handle that.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, very good. Well, tell us, give us a quick shameless self-promotion. How can people get hold of you, Jim, and where can they find out more information about your services?
Okay. If I could do one more thing before that, Pete.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to say that, veterans are a big part of me getting into something like this, and I want to do everything I can to help those that enabled me to not have to serve this country. And so I've aligned myself with this organization called the Veterans Care Coordination, and what they do is they're able to find VA dollars for veterans and or spouses. So this is a very valuable service. So many times when I get calls and people need assistance and don't have the money, I'm able to put them in touch with this group. The group goes through, calls them up, and does a screening process. There are, I think, 8 requirements that that need to happen in order for them to get assistance. But if it works out, they can get up to $24,000 per year for home care services. So it's a great organization, and I wanted to spread the word about that. So if there's people out there who think that their husband served in a war or served this country, and maybe he's no longer with us, but the spouse is, the spouse may be entitled for dollars for home care assistance. So, and what they can do is if they want more information, they can call me. And now the promotion you mentioned, the company is called First Light Home Care. The website address is www.scottsdale.firstlighthomecare.com, and a phone number is 480-922-2820.
Great. I'm glad you reminded us about that veterans operation. That's very important, and I'm sorry I missed it. I'm glad you thought to make sure that you mentioned it. There is one other thing also that I want to go back to just briefly before we close it off for this show. When you had mentioned earlier that at some level that Medicare will pay for your service. What is entailed in getting to be qualified for Medicare? At what level? How does it have to happen that Medicare pays for your service?
Well, unfortunately, they don't right now. But there are some lobbying. They nothing that we do is covered by Medicare.
Okay.
So 97% of our clients are private pay, and the other 3% is long-term care insurance. But unfortunately, we feel that some of our services should be covered by Medicare, but they're not. But there are efforts to make that lobbying effort out there. So hopefully, maybe at some point, Medicare would reimburse us for what we do.
Okay, then I misunderstood what you said, because it's a skilled nursing situation that is covered by Medicare, correct?
Yes. The other home care services that offer the skilled nursing and the rehab services are covered by Medicare.
Okay. Very good. That was the important part then that I had missed. Okay. Very good. Well, Jim, thanks again for being a guest on the show today. I appreciate it. It's been a very interesting conversation, and good luck to you and your endeavors. And just keep those folks happy. You know, just keep them
absolutely
happy.
Yes. Right. Well, thank you, Pete. I enjoyed it, and I thank you for this opportunity.
Well, thank you for joining us today. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care now. And we've been listening to and talking with Mr. Jim Cruz of First Light Home Care. And firstlighthomecare.com will get you there, and you'll be able to pretty much find out all the other contact information as far as what you might expect from their services. So give them an opportunity if you're of a mind to have some in-home, non-medical in-home care for anybody that's in need in your family. So with that, we're going to say have a great day, everybody. I want to remind you that tonight at from 5 to 8 o'clock is the Valley View Community Food Bank fundraiser at the new Steinmart store in Surprise, Arizona, and that is in the Crown Plaza, I believe it is, on Bell Road. Surprise Town Center on Bell Road, and it's from, as I said today, from 5 o'clock until 8 o'clock p.m. Go on by, get a ticket. You can still get a ticket at Valley View Community Food Bank. It's a $5 ticket. All of that $5 goes to the food bank, and we invite you to do that. You can go out there, and you can meet the other half of the Boomer the Babe. Deborah Brown will be there signing autographs. No, I'm just teasing. She's not going to be signing autographs. But at any rate, go on out and partake of the activities. It benefits an excellent organization. There is free food. And you also get some discounts by buying that ticket. You get some discounts on clothing that you might choose to buy there. This is a pre-grand opening. This is a charity grand opening, and it's something that everybody's invited to, but you only get in with it. Only get in with a ticket. So, and there is a limited number of tickets. So go to valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com, or if you're in the area, stop by the food bank at 107th Avenue in Peoria and go ahead and pick up a ticket right there. And I think in the thrift store over there, they have tickets for $5 a piece. So we encourage you to do that and support the food bank, something that we're involved in, and we'd like to see a lot more people involved. So with that, I'll say goodbye, and we'll be back later at 11 o'clock today, and we'll have another guest, and we'll be talking about the 8 stages of marriage. This should be an interesting guest as well. Thanks again for listening, and we will talk to you again later today, and then again back tomorrow. Thanks. Have a great day, everybody.
You've been listening to Arizona Boomer Radio with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Arizona Boomer Radio is produced by the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated and can be heard Monday through Friday. You can sign up for their online magazine at boomerandthebabe.com. To reach the Boomer and the Babe, email host@boomerandthebabe.com or friend them on facebook.com/boomerandbabe. And on Blog Talk, you can friend them at blogtalkradio.com/boomerandbabe. Follow their tweets at twitter.com/boomerandbabe. Be sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life. And remember, at 50, you're just getting started.